Okay, Rabosai, Simon Shin Lamed Hey Hilchos Biker Cholim. Mechaber Simon Shin Lamed Hey Mitzvah Lebaker Cholim. Okay, that we're hopefully all familiar with already. Shouldn't be a chiddush to us. Hakrovim Vachavirim Nichlasim Miyad Varechokim Acher Shloshi Yamin. So the people are close, come right away. The people are not so close, wait 3 days, unless it was a sudden bad disease, in which case everyone's concerned and they should come right away. The Taz here brings down that the reason everyone doesn't come right away is because we don't want to make the disease look like a bigger deal than it is. In general, there's a concept called Isra Mazle in Shas, which means that if you make something into more of a danger than it is, it could become more of a danger. So you shouldn't treat things less seriously than they are, like you shouldn't treat coronavirus less seriously than it actually is, but you also shouldn't treat things more seriously than they are, because it's a bit like Psichos Pelasatan, and it's not proper to treat things more seriously, and therefore the principle here is that you have to treat Biker Cholim with the appropriate seriousness, using a judgment call as to when it's worth visiting someone, not if they have the sniffle and you're not close to them, etc. Base. Okay, it's not a matter of social hierarchy. It's a mitzvah. After all, if Hashem could do Biker Cholim for Avraham Avinu, then lechor, if you work out the ratios, I am not greater than anyone, more than Hashem's greater than a human being. And even multiple times in a day, obviously not everyone's going to go visit everyone multiple times in a day. We'd have nothing else to do in our life, but when appropriate. Va'afilu ben gilo. Even Ben Gilo. What does Ben Gilo mean? So the Gemara says even Ben Gilo. What's the Chiddush of even Ben Gilo? Even though I think someone on the side here, the Shach, points out that a Ben Gilo takes upon himself a 60th of the Choli. In which case, it's a Chiddush. Even though you're getting a little sick because you're taking some of the sickness on yourself, nonetheless, it's still a mitzvah levaker cholim. Someone asked during the Seder. That means a mitzvah to put yourself in danger for Biker Cholim? No. If you're going to catch a terrible disease, Chas V'Shalom, you shouldn't put yourself in danger for Biker Cholim. But apparently, Chazal and Rashar, this 60th, which may be Lav Davka, it means a little bit. 60th in Chazal is always a little. This little bit that you get, that's not Sakana. So therefore, the point is, if it'll make you, even if it'll be an inconvenience for you, even if it'll be a bit of a mitzvah for you, that doesn't pop to you from the mitzvah of Biker Cholim. What does this whole Ben Gilo work? So there are two Perushim. The Perush that was Makobal among many Mepharshim is quoted by the Taz here, that Ben Gilo means that you were born at the same time under the same astrological signs. And therefore you have some mystical connection. And because that mystical connection, you take a 60th of his holy, so you make him a 60th better and yourself a 60th worse. And the Chiddush is you have to make that much Mesiras Nefesh, maybe not more than that, but that's much Mesiras Nefesh for the mitzvah. The Me'iri on the Gemara, interprets it in a less mystical way. Kedarka Bakodesh, the Me'iri always interprets everything that seems mystical in the Gemara in what we would call a rationalist fashion. The Me'iri says Ben Gilo doesn't mean the same astrological signs, like born under the same planets, etc. at the same time. Rather, Ben Gilo means the same age, like the friend, a peer group. And what's unique about a peer group? That you take away a 60th of his disease, because when someone's visited by someone who they can identify with and feel close to, then it makes them feel so much better that it takes away a 60th of their disease because of the mind-body connection. That when you really feel good, it helps lighten your disease. You would say that maybe you take a little on yourself, you know, because if I go to a 90-year-old, do Biker Cholim, so I don't take any, you know, mind body weakness onto myself, because okay, that's an old guy, and what does that have to do with me? If I go to someone my age who's deathly ill in the hospital, then it's a bit of a shock for me. Then it could be even depressing for me, or it could be difficult for me because now I feel my own mortality, and maybe that could be like a 60th of a disease. So according to the Meiri, you would view it psychologically. I have to, even though I have a psychological sacrifice, a 60th of a disease, when I go see a guy with my age who's chas v'shalom dying in the hospital. Nonetheless, I should go because of how much better it makes him and helps possibly cure his disease. Okay, two ways, mystical, astrological versus psychological of understanding Ben Gilo. Either way, you have to do it. Okay, this is one of these cases where if you ask the Shulchan Aruch, when is most of a reza meshubach and when is it a tircha for you to visit the guy too much? The answer is you have to use your common sense. And if you don't have common sense, then it's very tricky. Anyone who doesn't have common sense should find someone with common sense to give them advice all the time. The Rama continues. Yesh omrim desone yacholelech levaker chole velo nireli. Hello, lo yivaker cholav lo yinachim. Glo yinachim avel shu son osh lo yachshov shesamech le'edo ve'ein lo ela tzar kein nireli. Okay, there's a big machlokus, also machlokus in psychology. If two people hate each, if one person hates someone, lichatchila, you shouldn't have this shayla because you shouldn't hate anyone. But if there is someone who you're in a big fight with and you hate them, then it's a machlokus whether you should go do biker cholim and nicham avelim because maybe that'll be a way for you to make up. Or no, when you go do biker cholim, the guy will think that you're happy that he's sick. And when you do nicham avelim, the guy will think that you're happy that his relative died. Halach l'maisa, the Ramah paskins lechumra, that you should not go because if you're not sure if you'll make the guy better or worse by going, because maybe he'll think that you're happy that he's sick and you're coming to gloat, then misafik shei v'altase adif. However, the Shach points out at the end of Sivkot and Beis that hakol lefi mashu asinol fi mashim sonim, you have to use your common sense to make a judgment call. There's sinna and there's sinna, so you just have to use your common sense based on the situation. The Shach says, in any case, you could go to the levaya of someone you hate, because everyone knows that once the guy's dead, then already you let it go, and now you're just coming to pay kavod. If gimel hamivaker es ha chole, lo yeshiv agabi mitav lo agabi kisev lo agabi safsal elam es ate v'yoshiv lefanav she'ashchim elamala me ra shosav. This is a mafurish gemara. When you're doing biker cholim, you can't sit on a chair or a et cetera, et cetera. Rather, you have to sit on the floor, A, and B, you have to misatef, you have to put your tichel on your head, right? Like in the old days, at serious moments and serious people, like Talmid Chachamim would always wear a tichel on their heads, you know, like if you've ever seen a picture of the Baba Sali, that's what they call ituf in the old days. So you have to sit on the floor and have ituf. Why? Because the Gemara says, the Shechina is with the Chola, Hashem Yisadenu al Eres Davai, the Pasuk says, that means the Shechina is always mamish at the head of the chole, and since the shechina is there, you need ituf. And since the shechina is there, you shouldn't sit on the chair and you know, in a leisurely fashion. Rather, you should sit on the floor. Luckily for all of us, the Ramah adds, "V'davka k'shachole shochev al ha'aretz." I mean, it's not the Ramah; it's Tosfos and all the other Rishonim. Da'hainu da'yoshev go'al mi'enu shochev al amita motu leish val kisev safsal b'chein nogim. This is only if the chole is on the ground, which is not shliach nowadays. Then you can't sit on a chair because how can you be taller than the shechina? Nowadays, the chola is always on a bed, so you're allowed to sit on a chair. Don't worry, you can sit on a chair. But nonetheless, you have to have eima from the shechina. Two aros I want to make about this. Number one is a practical ha'ara. That Tzitz Eliezer has a kuntras about bigur cholim and other inyanim. And he writes there that nowadays, if you're wearing a yarmulke, you're yotze to itof, because our yarmulke is like the tichels they used to wear in the old days. So you don't, some people are makbid if you're the type who wears a black hat for davening. I mean, it doesn't actually matter if it's black halachically. If you're the type who wears a hat for davening, then many people are makbid to wear a hat for biker cholim because of this misatef. Makes a lot of sense. Okay, if you're the type to wear a yarmulke for davening, then wear a yarmulke for biker cholim. That's good enough for misatef. But in any case, you should sit bekovid rosh. Someone who's doing biker cholim should sit, probably more important than whether they wear a black hat or a yarmulke, is that they feel the kovod rosh, they really feel the presence of the shechina. And I think this is also something which, from a pastoral perspective, is important to express in some ways to the chole. It's very, you know, it sounds like just this abstract idea to us, but if the person there is sick, to know that the shechina is there with him in a, you know, I wouldn't say a concrete way, that's going a little far, but in a more pronounced way than just regular melocha or its kavodo, I think is a very gives a lot of chizuk to the chole, to know that, you know, Hashem doesn't just run the whole world mikarnei re'emim ad beitzei kinim, but that Hashem takes a special interest and has a specially rest His presence with this chole. I think is a very a tremendous chizuk to a chole. You know, I can't tell the chola whether he'll get better or whether he won't get better, and, you know, what Hashem's plan is for the world, etc. These things are beyond my pay grade. But I think I can tell the Chola that I don't know what Hashem's plan is, but I know that Hashem is right there with him, and is feeling what he's feeling and is understanding what he's going through and is giving him Ashgacha. And I don't know what the best is, but whatever the best is, Hashem is there in his full presence, as it were, making sure that that happens. I think that's a tremendous chizuk. Yes, Yoni. Yeah. Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I got it. If the person on the bed lying down will be lower than me sitting straight up in my chair, is that a problem? Like if he's lying flat and I'm sitting straight up in my chair, my head will be higher than his.
No, that's always the case. That was the case in the Days of Arma also. That's not a problem. The assumption is since beds are generally at least as high as chairs, even though your head is higher than his head, since your chair is not higher than his bed generally, you don't have to measure the inches. It's more or less Seder Godel, as they say here, his bed, that's fine. That's why most people sit on normal chairs when they do Bikur Chola. Okay, good question. Se'if Dalet. Ein Mevakrin Chola b'sholosh os rishona shol yom b'nei shekol chola mekel av chol yom b'boker lo yachus levakrin shol rachmim v'lo b'sholosh os achrono shol yom shol machmur lo av chol yom v'yis ya'esh mi Levakish shel Avrachman. The Gemara says you shouldn't visit a chola in the first 3 hours of the day or the last 3 hours of the day. Why? So most Rishonim say because the first 3 hours of the day he looks very good, and so you won't daven for him because you'll say he's okay, or you won't daven seriously when you'll say he's okay. The last 3 hours of the day he looks so bad, you won't daven seriously for him because you'll say it's hopeless anyway. But the middle of the day, he looks like mom is 50-50, and you'll pour your heart out davening for him. The Rambam has a different shot, which is that the first 3 hours and last 3 hours of the day, they're busy taking care of him, and you don't want to interfere with the medical care. Before we get back to the shot of most Rishonim, just technically, and nowadays, not necessarily the first 3 hours, last 3 hours of the day, but this Rambam is very important, that when you do Bikur Cholim, you shouldn't get in the way of the medical care. You should have sensitivity to that. B, Lemaisa, that Tzitz Eliezer points out, we're not really makbid on this nowadays. Why are we not makbid on this nowadays? Number one, there are many, many answers. But number one, the Orcha Shulchan says it's really an Eitzah Tova, it's not a Chiyuv Gomer, and therefore, if it's inconvenient, you don't have to do it. And also, because nowadays our schedules are very busy, and if we have time to figure hold them, we don't want to push it off to another time because maybe we don't have time. And it's better to chop the mitzvah, especially if it just needs a tova. So nowadays, we're not makbid on this. However, we should be makbid on the idea behind it. Number one, according to the Ramban, not to interfere with medical care. Number two, according to most Rishonim, the idea of davening for the chola. From here, we get the idea, which the Rama ends with, quoting the famous Ramban, "B'chol shebiker v'lo biker shalav rachim lo kiyem ha-mitzvah." Whoever did biker cholim and didn't daven was not makayim the mitzvah. This is a big yesod that a lot of people don't know, but that an ikar part of Bikur Cholim is to daven for the chole. The best way to do that is before you leave the room. Just say a quick tefillah so you don't forget later, but obviously it means to take it home with you in your heart and really put it into your davening as well. Lemaisa, this gets into the fundamental chakira, the fundamental question in this simon, which is, what's the point of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? And many achronim point out that there are two reasons for the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. One is, and this comes up a few places, the Rishonim bring many rayas to daven for the chola. And the Rama says even that's ma'akev. If you don't daven, it's ma'akev the mitzvah. After all, what can I do for a chola? If I'm a doctor, that's simin shin lamed vav. But if I'm not a doctor, I'm just a regular simin shin lamed hey guy, what can I do for the chola? The answer is, I can daven for him, just like we believe that you shouldn't just daven and not do a shtadlus, because you have to do your shtadlus and work through the teva. Likewise, we believe you shouldn't just do your shtadlus and not daven, because as much as we work through the teva, Hashem runs the world, and he runs the teva. And therefore, it is ma'akev, not just important, but ma'akev to daven for the chole. Another reason for bigger cholim, the Achronim point out, and the Rishonim point out from a famous story with Rabbi Akiva, is to make sure that the needs of the chole are taken care of. There's a story through Akiva that he went to do Bikur Cholim, and he saw they weren't properly taking care of the chole, they weren't sweeping the floor properly, or whatever they used to do to keep the dust down, etc. And he went and he made sure that that they took proper care of the chola. And the chola came later and says, "Rekiba, you saved my life." Lemaisa, it's an important part of bigger cholim is obviously, I don't mean to interfere in an obnoxious way, but to make sure the chola's needs are being taken care of. Now, nowadays, Adi, you have to unmute yourself.
That sounds like it would make sense to make sure his needs are taken care of. Then that sounds like it would allow for someone to specifically visit at a time when other people are taking care of him, like the first 3 hours of the day,
right. So I think the problem, I think the issue is not that you should be a, what do they call it? Not that you should be a backseat driver to the medical staff. While they're doing it, they probably don't need your instructions how to do their job better. The case of Rabbi Akiva was a case where people just weren't like prioritizing this chola.
Of like nursing homes where they talk about people who have common visitors oftentimes get treated significantly better.
Okay, exactly. So that's what I wanted to point out, that how does this idea of making sure they take care of his needs apply nowadays? Lemaisa nowadays, if someone's sick at home with their family, you know, in Rabbi Akiva's case, the guy wasn't with his family. In the case where someone's sick at home with their family, they're generally taking care of his needs unless there's something dysfunctional about the family. And if someone's in a hospital, they have a medical staff. So it could be someone's home and the family's not taking care of him, although that's a little rare. But as Adi pointed out, the most important thing nowadays is this is baduk u'menuseh. It's well known in all, not only nursing homes, but hospitals, every place. The amount of care a patient gets depends on how many visitors he has and how chashuv those visitors look. And even more importantly, whether it looks like they might be a lawyer or be close to a lawyer. I know it's funny, but unfortunately it's true. And it's a davar yadua that if there's an old guy with no visitors, they're not going to take care of him properly for good reasons, bad reasons, whatever it may be. You know, we can put the blame wherever we want. But in modern day medicine, when someone's not with their family, they're not going to be taken care of if no one cares about them. Because they know no one's checking on you. Lemaisa, if you're the nurse, whatever, there's one guy who a lot of people are checking on, and one guy no one's checking on, you're going to be afraid of being criticized, caught, sued, yelled at, etc., by the person people are checking on. Not only that, you're going to think he's a chashuv guy, an important person, because people are checking on him, especially if important people check on him, especially, you know, guys with suits and ties check on him, etc., you know, who look like they might be lawyers. But even if not, so I think that it's crucially important that part of Bikur Cholim nowadays is you need, like, if there's an old guy from your shul who's in the hospital, there's no relatives, you need to make a Torah note of people to go visit him, just to make sure that they don't stam let him die in the hospital. I'll tell you, Uv Dahava Bididi, before I made Aliyah, I lived in Brooklyn. My next door neighbors, Mamish, like it was a corner, our doors touched each other, like the Karen Zavis, as it were. My apartment was here and their apartment was there with older Jewish couple, not from at all, but an older Jewish couple who were very nice people, although I think they were a little less with it than they were when they were in their prime. And he was treated at Veterans Hospital. I guess he was a veteran of, I'm not sure which war, I guess either Vietnam or Korea, however the, I could probably cheshbon it out if I thought about it. Probably Korea. And he went to Veterans Hospital, which is not known for the highest standards of care in the entire universe. And it was mamish amazing. I would get the reports from his wife, Lou and Estelle. He would go into the hospital. They would tell her, you know, it's time to pull the plug. You know, it's time to let him go, to stop muttering him, etc. You know, and she would say, no, absolutely not. And she would fight and kick and scream that they had to do everything to keep him alive. And lo and behold, he got better and he went right back home. I mean, in Hanami, at home, he just sat on his easy chair and ate and drank and watched TV. But I mean, that's what he had been doing beforehand. And in America, that's totally functioning for the average person nowadays. So whatever, he enjoyed life. I wouldn't enjoy sitting watching TV all day, but he enjoyed life as much as the average American wants to enjoy life. And this went on, I don't mean for days, months, a year or two, you know, they always say, oh, that's it. No more treatment. You know, time to go, waste of time. She would put up a fuss. And he would mamish live. She mamish saved his life. And what happened once, unfortunately, she got sick and was taken to the hospital and was not in a state where she could do anything. And maybe it's coincidence, but I doubt it. Mamish, she got sick. She went to the hospital. Right after that, he died. Because there was no one to put up a fight for him. And that's really, in modern medicine, that's how it works. That if no one proves that, if no one's there caring about you and maybe even putting up a fight for you, then you're not going to get proper care. So I think that this second din really does apply nowadays, not even in hospitals, but especially in hospitals and nursing homes, et cetera. Okay, theoretically, maybe it should be better than that, but that's the way the world works. So the mice, those are the two main reasons. The two first reasons are to daven for the chola and to make sure he's being taken care of. Of course, the third reason they point out is one line in the Ramban here, the Ramban quoted by the Beis Yosef, which is probably the reason that was intuitive to us that we thought before we started reading all the Rishonim and Achronim, says the Ramban. The first thing he says is, that they'll take care of him. The third reason he says is, and the middle reason he says is, of course, to make him feel better that his friends are there. So there are three reasons. The second one is probably what we thought all along. Number one, to make sure his needs are being taken care of. Number two, to make him feel better when he has visits. And number three, to daven for him. But all these three reasons are important. This comes up in a famous discussion. There's a famous Igros Moshe about this, as well as many other Achronim, all of whom saying more or less the same thing. The Igros Moshe says, can you be Yotzei Bikur Cholim with a phone call? Nowadays, sometimes if the Chola is young enough, you could do better than a phone call. You could FaceTime, Skype, Zoom, whatever it is you call it, video chat the Chola. So Rav Moshe writes that if you can visit the Chola, then you're not Yotzei with just a phone call. Because if you visit him, you'll make sure his needs are taken care of. Just a phone call will not make sure his needs are taken care of. But if you can't visit him, then it's a mitzvah to at least call him, because calling him is a partial kiyum of bikur cholim. Says Rav Moshe, and the Tzitzel Yehuda says the same thing. Even though you can't take care of his needs, you can do the other two at least partially. You'll daven for him, because if you call him and see how he's feeling, that'll give you and instead that will push you to daven hard, and you'll obviously make him feel better by calling him. Rav Moshe says, but it'll make him feel better more if you visit in person, and you'll daven better if you see him in person. But nonetheless, Rav Moshe says, since you're mostly but not fully mekayim two of the three in yonim through a phone call, therefore Rav Moshe says, if you can't make it, you should do a phone call. But if you can make it, it's better to go in person. So if you go in person, you have all three in yonim. If you make a phone call, it's only mostly two in yonim. Okay.
Rebbe? Question? Rebbe? You're presenting this as three different dinim, and the Beis Yosef does list like three different things, but isn't this all just one din that you need to do what you can to ensure the physical recovery of the chola? And it's just tefila is part of physical recovery, and nachas ruach is part of physical recovery, and treatment is part of physical recovery?
Yeah, I think you're probably right that it's not three dinim, it's three hechitimtzis of one din. But I don't know that chiluk is nafgrin as lamaisa.
For the Igros Moshe, you could say, like, if it's just caring for physical needs and tefillah is as much a part of that as anything else, like, why is a phone call at all, or also nachas ruach, why is a phone call at all b'di'eved? Because you're still doing nachas ruach, you still get a better sense of the punishment.
So he says because it's more nachas ruach if you come in person, and you'll daven better if you go in person. Because eino doma shmiel re'iyah, when you see something in person, you daven about it better. I think he's right there. Okay. But that resonates with me. Okay. The continuing.
Is there an aspect of Lidamos Lashem?
From a philosophical perspective, I mentioned before you came on that Rav Lifting liked to point out that there were two philosophical bases for this. One, the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Avel says it's V'hafdu L'Yachad Kamocha. Two, the Gemara says V'alach B'drachav. It's part of going in the drachim of Hashem. One is sort of virtue ethics, as it were, Aristotle / Rambam / McIntyre v'chule, that you having the right midos, and the other is you perhaps caring about your friend. So yes, there is an aspect of Lidamas Lashem and an aspect of caring for your friend. We could wax philosophical about the exact relationship between them, but we'll leave it at that. This is because the idea that Malachim don't understand Aramaic. And therefore, if you're at home by yourself, you have to daven in Hebrew. Okay, big machlokes, whether you understand other languages, but just to be on the safe side for the chole, the Achronim explicit say we go with Hebrew. If you're there, then the Shekhinah is there, so you can daven in Aramaic. Okay, here also, the Meiri says that it's not in Shabbos, that it's not Davka referring to Malachim bringing tefillos. What it really means is that if you're in a place where you feel the presence of the Shekhinah, then in any language you'll be able to daven well. Well, if you're just at home, you need to daven in Hebrew in order to have the proper kavana. But either way, that's the halacha. But yichlol also b'sochol Yisrael shenem yomar hamakim yirachem alechem b'sochol Yisrael. Right, you have to say, we all know this, b'sochol Yisrael. Nowadays, say b'soch sharchol Yisrael. It's the same basic idea. That way, the z'chos of the rabbim is omed lo. Yes, Eli.
Do we paskin like this as far as davening in Lashon HaKodesh?
Yes, we do paskin like this, that if you are be yachid, not with a chola, you should not. Well, okay, so they point out, actually, the Achronim here point out, who points it out on the side here? Someone I saw. Let me just look here. Yeah, the Taz and the Nekudas HaKesef says he agrees, points out that it's a machlokes rishonim whether be yachidos at home, you could just not daven Aramaic or you have to daven in Hebrew. Like, are you allowed to daven in English? Aramaic, no. Hebrew, yes. How about English? It's a machlok, because we've shown him the Gemara. And they point out that the Torah has a bit of a possible stira, that in Or Chaim he allowed for the Shita you could daven any language but Aramaic, and here he said dafke Hebrew. So the Taz concludes that it's a suffix. Definitely can't daven Aramaic. Definitely can daven in Hebrew. Again, bit Sibor, the Shekhinah's there. Everyone knows the Shekhinah's with a minion. So you can daven in anything. By a chole, you can daven in anything. We're talking about if you're beyachid without a chole. Then Aramaic, definitely no. Hebrew, definitely yes. All other languages is a machlokes. If it's a machlokes, then better than nothing. But he says, therefore, at least in Bikur Cholim, it's better to be on the safe side and daven in Hebrew. But halacha l'maaseh, if someone doesn't know Hebrew, then they could daven in English because they'll hop one side of the machlokas and it's better than nothing.
Shouldn't this just be a nafkamina of whether or not you take like the mystical approach? Because like for the Meiri, if the point is your kavana,
quite you possibly, yes, quite possibly. Definitely.
We should be davening to the angels to help bring them up. Like Machnisi Rachman clearly is.
No, but we're not talking about here davening to the angels to bring it up. We're just talking about davening to Hashem, and the angels need to bring our tefillos, even if we don't ask them to. They do it automatically. But we're not going to get into that. That's already too far afield. That's a big onion. Okay, Vav, you always have to be social Chol Yisrael. That's an obvious word of the Zchus of the Rabbim. The Shabbos Omer, Shabbos Himi Lizok, Ur Fua Krova Lavo. Everyone knows that's what we say on Shabbos. Okay, the Shach points out that it's a Beis Yosef Kodem Chalokas Rishonim. The Mechaber in Hilchos Shabbos adds Verachma Rubim, etc. But the Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos agrees with the Mechaber here. So we pass like the Mechaber here because the Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos agrees with the Mechabers here that all we have to say is Shabbos Yimi Lizok or Furukor Olavo and not the added words, the Shita Rav Yossi or whoever it was, I forget, that are quoted by the Shach here. Zion, Amr lo sheitin daitol in yonav im hilva ohivkid etzal achirim or achirim hilva ohivkidu etzlo v'al yifachim neizem me'amavis. If someone's sick, they should settle their accounts so they don't have any xalos, give back, you know, pay back what they owe and make sure that they give back that their kids know what people owe them and what they owe other people so they don't lose or gain and cause any kneven dine mamonos and don't be afraid you're going to die. Because just because you want to make sure your affairs are in order and all your money is going to be honestly not too much, not too little, is not an ayin hara of dying. Ches ein mevakrim lo lecholim ayin lo lecholay ayin lo lecholay arosh shechem lechol choli de takef le alma v'koshle dibura ein mevakrim so befanav. There are two different isurim here. One is cholim ayin, people with intestinal disease because they are embarrassed because they are soiling themselves. And they're embarrassed and they'd rather not be visited. Two is people with eye or head disease because it hurts them to talk. and therefore it hurts them. Okay, nowadays our medicine is a little more advanced, so it doesn't really matter what kind of disease, but the principle still applies. If someone's embarrassed to be seen, then you shouldn't visit them. How do you know? If you're not sure, you can ask their relatives. I remember there was a Gadol HaTorah who was in the hospital, and his relative says, please don't come visit him. You know, he'd rather not take visitors because, you know, it was not proper kavod. So you shouldn't visit someone if they're going to be embarrassed, and you also shouldn't visit someone if it's going to be hard for them to receive you, and it's going to be too painful for them to receive you. You have to use your common sense. Again, if you don't have common sense, you probably should not become a rabbi. You should finish smicha and become an actuary or something. Ella, what do you do for these cholim? It doesn't mean you're pater legamrei. You're pater from the aspect of making them feel better, but you're not pater from the other two things. You can still partially be mekayim the other two things. Ella nechnasim v'isachitzam v'sholem v'dorshim bo and tzrichim l'chad l'rabbis l'fanim v'kayotzim bo v'sholem tzaro v'mvakshan lo v'rachanim. You go to the outer room, make sure their needs are being taken care of, and daven for them. Tess. Mevakrim choli akum v'nedarkei shalom. Okay, this is actually a big machlokas rishonim, not what it says. It's a Gemara that says, do biker cholim and nichum aveilim and tzedaka, etc. to akum here means not ger toshav and etc. It doesn't mean only good goyim who qualify for privileges. It means even akum, even idolaters who do not qualify for any privileges in halacha. You still do be, even like the bad goyim, you still do biker cholim because of darkei shalom. The lashon of the Gemara is mevakrim choli akum im choli Yisrael and etc. im, you know, Kovra may say akum im and mefarnesu ni akum in, etc. So it's a big machlok shoshonim what that means. That means only with Jews, like if there are two people in a double hospital room, one is a goy, one is a Jew, you visit the goy with the Jew for darkei shalom, but you don't visit the goy by himself. Or no, im means like just like we visit Jewish sick people, we visit goyish sick people. The Gra points out here that the Shulchan Aruch is consistent in Hilchos Tzedakah and in many other areas of halacha, the Hiz Machriya, like the more Machmir version, that it doesn't, you don't only do chesed for the Akum, mamish right next to the Jew for Darkei Shalom, even if there's no Jew around, even if the Goy is in a room by himself, you still do Bikur Cholim for the Goy for Darkei Shalom. Obviously, I don't mean you have to go do Bikur Cholim for every Goy. I mean, there's 9 billion people in the world. What it means, if there's a guy who it's socially, you know, appropriate that you would, or a person with socially appropriate to biker cholim for, I don't mean every random stranger in the street. There's a lot of strangers. But if it's someone you know, a neighbor, a coworker, etc., who it's, you know, you're in a social position to do biker cholim, then you shouldn't not do biker cholim because they're a guy. And even without these me'iris that are modern day goyim are like your toshavs, and even if he doesn't keep Shevet Mitzvah Enoch, etc., even if he's, you know, he wakes up every morning, eats Avram and Achai, you know, steals and bows down to an idol, etc., nonetheless, you should do Bikur Cholim for Darkei Shalom. Okay, those of us who want to get into philosophy will ask the question, what does Darkei Shalom mean? It's a well-known machlokas, then I'll take Yoni, whether it means Bishom Eva, that it's in order to avoid anti-Semitism, which is always a good idea, or it's like the Rambam says, because Kol Nesivos Shalom, the ways of the Torah are peaceful, so therefore we always go further than halacha demands when it comes to getting along nicely with people, because that's the way of the Torah. Lemaisa, either way, whether it means to avoid anti-Semitism or whether it means because the ways of the Torah are to always get along and have closeness between people, either way, we're Mitzvah and Darkei Shalom, and therefore one should do Bikur Cholim, even for Goyim, as socially appropriate. Yonah.
Does this include davening for the Cholim?
That is a great question. Lemaisa, I don't have anything mesudder about this, but I do recall I've seen more than one of the Gedolei Poskim quoted as saying that in cases where, you know, you're really concerned about a guy, especially people have, you know, sometimes they have family members who are guy, people are converts, etc., or people who are very close to them where they care very much about who are goyim and very special people who are goyim, etc., then it would certainly be appropriate to daven for a goy. I don't know if that means every goy in the entire world, I definitely, at least in many cases, would include davening. Menastam, we know in Hilfsburg's a Muslim, they say we don't usually daven for people who are not me'anshei shlomenu, especially, you know, since throughout history a lot of the goyim have not really treated us in a way that we would want to daven for them. But when appropriate, then yes. Okay.
Yes. Would it be tally on whether or not the pshat is derech hadach ha'noam or just avoid antisemitism? Because derech hadach ha'noam.
It might very well. Ein hachanami. I agree. Okay. Yud. Becholim me'ayim in ish mishamish the isha v'le'isha mishamesh esha es ha'ish. Cholim me'ayim. Okay, there's a whole dion here, a million pshat in the achronim. I'm not going to get into them. The point of cholim me'ayim is that intestinal disease, they have to go to the bathroom a lot, and there's often a giloy of the makom erva. And therefore, we say a man cannot be a nurse for a woman because he'll always see the woman's erva and have to help her up and down a lot and see her erva. But the woman could be a nurse for a man. Okay, without getting into the details, we know that the man has a greater yitzhara than the woman when it comes to these things of the mainstream shot. I don't know if people are so macro on this nowadays, but maybe we should be. Yesh omrim, shemi sheyesh lo chola beveso, yelech itzal chacham, shebeir sheyivakesh alav avrachim, sheyivakesh alav avrachim. Yesh omrim, that if you have a sick person, you should go to a talmud chacham and a tzaddik to daven for them. We see from here that going to asking a tzaddik to daven for you is not just a chassidish zach. It's in the Shulchan Aruch, because we do believe that tzaddik has special protection, as it were, with the special closeness to Hashem, and therefore that is a good idea. Scott, you had a question.
Yeah, going back to Eino Yishma Shalisha for Isha, so is this halacha within Helkosh, like Yichud and Megia Derechiba and like Osek B'Mu'achton? We're saying, like, even if generally there is a heter because there was Osek B'Mu'achton, here the heter doesn't apply.
Yes, that's what we're saying. We're saying even though generally nursing is mutter, but in a case where it's like mugzam, as they say, where it's really going very far because it's a lot of gilui erev and a lot of physical contact, then at least in one direction of a man treating a woman, then we are macher, even though technically like each bit, each minute would be mutter, but in the whole picture, we say it's inappropriate.
Right. So today,
what?
We're assuming that there's just higher levels of professionalism today or more like nirsas or something?
It's an interesting question. Maybe. Meaning in the hospitals, et cetera, maybe the higher level of professionalism, certainly when it comes to like home care, et cetera. I don't know. Maybe in the hospitals, higher level of professionalism, the hospital things work differently. Anyway, I hear this far. Efsher. Okay. Continuing. V'cheinog olivar cholim beis ha'knesses. And likewise, the minigs make a mishaberach and shul, likul lem shem chadash, and we change the name. Everyone knows if someone's really sick, we change their name. Kishina shenkorek zardino. Okay, end. We change their name. One thing which is not here, but is found in other places in the Shulchan Aruch that's important to know, if you change someone's name because they're sick and they get better, the halacha is the name change sticks. That's their new name forever. If you change someone's name because they're sick and it fails and they die anyway of that disease, the name change doesn't stick. So that's important, for example, for a matzeva, if someone's name is Shimon and they're sick and they have cancer, they go to Rafal Shimon. If they get better and then they die a year later, then we write Rafal Shimon and we say Rafal Shimon, etc. If they don't recover and they die and they never get better, then the Rafal is Batal Mafreya and we stick with Shimon. Important thing to know. One second. One important halacha discussed in the Shachsev Katan Yud is what about Shabbos? Are we allowed to say Mishaberach on Shabbos? Most achronim say, he quotes from Mari Weil, that you can't say Mishaberach cholam on Shabbos because it's Shabbos and Yontif. It's cholo Shabbos to cry about a chola. And the Ramah only writes in Mishpei Ches that the chola is Mesukin Boba Yom, not if he's a cholo Shev Shusakana, only if he might die that day. Like someone has cancer, they might die this year. But they're not going to die today. I mean, any more likely than anyone else. You don't say on Shabbos. According to the Ramah and most Achronim, you're only allowed to mean to be Yishmeishaberach on Shabbos if someone might die today. There's even discussion in the Pesach Tshuva, what if they're in another town and they might have already died? Are you allowed to be Mechalosh Are you allowed to ruin the spirit of Shabbos against the spirit of Shabbos by making Mishaberech? The Iker din seems to be that you should only make a Mishaberech on Shabbos if someone mamish might die today. Otherwise, it's not Doche owning Shabbos. However, the Mishnah Brura, the last Mishnah Brura in Siman Reish Pei Ches, I think it's Siman Reish Pei Ches, if Katan Chav Ches, writes that, and this is the heter everyone uses nowadays, if in the Mishaberech you put Shabbos Yimid Lizok or Fua Korba Lavo, then it doesn't count as Za'aka. You're saying Shabbos Yimid Lizok. And that's why nowadays everyone's Mekel against the Shach, against the Ramah, against almost all the Achronim, that they make a Mishaberech for everyone on Shabbos. I don't know if it's such a good idea, but Lamaisa, the Eilam, I personally don't run to the Gabbai to give names for Mishaberech on Shabbos unless the guy Mamish might die today, like the Ramah. But Lamaisa, the Minhag Olam, is to be Mekel. I think it's also, whatever, in my humble opinion, I think it's also good to have a little less people in the Mishaberech so people have a little more kavana. But Lamaisa, the Olam's Mekel, like the Mishnah Brura, in Reish Pei Ches, Sivkat and Chav Ches, that as long as you add Shabbos Yimid Lizok or Fur Korva Lavo, that makes it not Za'aka, just Stam, a light kind of tefillah, and therefore it's not against owning Shabbos, and that's why nowadays we put all the Cholim in Shul. Okay, last halacha, Nichma Velim Kodem Lib Bikur Cholim. Why is Nichma Velim before Bikur Cholim? Because Bikur Cholim only helps the sick person, and Nichma Velim helps the Avelim, the live people, because it makes them feel better, and also helps the dead person, because it gives kavod to him. And therefore, since it's a double chesed with the dead person, alts kavod, and with the live person, alts nichum, nichum avelim comes before biker cholim. What does comes before mean? The shakos and the bach. If you only have time for one, nichum avelim is docha biker cholim. However, if you have time for both, then it switches. Biker cholim comes before nichum avelim. Why? This is my taitch of the bach that's quoted in the shach. Because Nichma Velim, if you do it now or later, it's all the same. They'll feel better now, they'll feel better later. And they may still be honored now, be honored later. But Bikur Cholim, the earlier you do it, the more you can daven it, make sure his needs are taken care of him, and the more you can help him. Right? It's always better to treat the sick person earlier rather than later, whether you're treating him physically or spiritually. And therefore, if you only have time for one, go to Nichma Velim and assume everyone else will take care of the Choleh. But if you have time for both, go to Bikur Cholim first. That's the Halacha Lemaisa. Moving on to Shin Lamed Vav. Shin Lamed Vav. Nasna Torah Rishos L'Rofei L'Rapos. The Ramban points out that there are two Hava meanings you might have thought that the Rofei can't heal. One is, maybe you should be afraid he'll make a mistake and kill the guy. Kamash, well, no, the Torah told him to do his best. Two is, you might think he should say, if Hashem made him sick, then it's Hashem's, then why should I interfere with Hashem? The answer is, okay, there's a long taz about this. Ideally, should we be living on the level of Teva or should we not? But halacha lemaisa, we do live on the level of derech hateva, and therefore, you know, just like lechora, just like Rabbi Akiva said to Turnus Rufus, why does Hashem make people poor? Why should we give tzedakah? If Hashem made people poor, then shouldn't he just give him however much money he wants and we shouldn't interfere? One second. And the answer is no, Hashem wants us to do the chesed of helping them. So even though Hashem made someone sick, it's our, maybe he just wants us to do the chesed of healing them. So halacha lemaisa, a doctor is allowed to heal according to Judaism, which of course we all knew. Eli Weinstein.
Yeah, can you explain like the double standard in the previous halacha? Like, why does it make sense that like what the Bach is saying, that you can do bigger cholim first if you can do both because you can make a bigger impact right away? Yet if you have one or the other, you shouldn't do bigger cholim at all.
So I think that's the difficult part. And what I'm trying to say is that objectively what accomplishes more, Nichum Avelim accomplishes more than bigger cholim. But, so therefore, if you can only do one, do Nichum Avelim. Like, Nichum Avelim accomplishes 10, and Bikur Cholim accomplishes 9. Therefore, do Nichum Avelim, not Bikur Cholim. But if you can do them both anyway, Bikur Cholim first accomplishes 9.1. Bikur Cholim later accomplishes 9.0. And Nichum Avelim accomplishes 10 either way. So better do 9.1 plus 10, rather than 10 plus 9. That's my Hesber. I know the Bach didn't say all that, but I assume that's what he meant. Okay. Umitzvi, continuing Shin Lamed Vav, uvechla pikuach nefesh hu, v'imonea atzma reza shofech damim, v'afilu yesh lo mishir fa'enu shlom en ha'kolim zoch l'shrapos. A doctor refused to heal is like murdering, and even if there's another doctor, but we say the same thing about Rebbeim, Agav, that not every doctor is good for everyone. So if the chula wants to go to this doctor, he can't say there's other doctors. Maybe he's the best doctor for him because there's something subjective about this. And there's no objective rules who's the best doctor. we know this guy's the best doctor, but everyone's the best doctor for a different person. And therefore, if this guy wants to come to you, you have to heal him. Umiyolo, he's asking for foil and kenu bucky. That should be obvious to us. You have to be licensed. Velo yesham gadol mimenu, and there's not a better doctor available, meaning if there's only room in town for one doctor and there's a better doctor than you, then you should become an accountant. However, halacha lemaisa, nowadays, there's never enough doctors and we need all the doctors. But if you practice medicine without a license, or when you're not as qualified as the other guy and they only need one doctor, then it's shvichas damin. The imripe shalobr shazbezdin chayv tashlumen afilu hu baki. Right, if you make a mistake and you're not licensed, then even if you know everything, if you're not licensed, then you're chayv tashlumen. The imripe shazbezdin v'ta. But if you're licensed and you make a mistake, the hizik, malpractice, potum din adam chayv din shamayim. Right, according to, I don't know what it's like in secular law, but according to halacha, a doctor, the Nosek Kalinger point out, if the doctor's mazik b'mezid, the shach says that's obviously a different story. But a doctor who does malpractice for shogeg is potter b'dinei adam, just because otherwise the medical system, you know, would get gummed up like it does nowadays. Okay, there are arguments both ways. We're not going to get into them. But he's chayv b'dinei shamayim b'mheimis v'notol shogolo yado. If you kill someone b'shogeg, then you're chayv golos, because even a potter b'dinei adam tashlumen for a licensed doctor, killing is much more chamer, and he's still chayv to go into galus. But as the shach points out, you should still practice medicine. You should just do the best you can. Okay, halacha l'maaseh, we're not going to go into the details of these. These shailas don't really come up a lot because l'maaseh, the lawyers work it out, and the doctors always end up paying. Beis harofe aser litol schar hachochma v'alimud. The rofe is not allowed to charge for his intelligence. And limud l'chora means not that he learned, that's part of chachma, but for giving instructions to the patient. Like the rofe can't say, oh, I'll give you a diagnosis and I'll charge you for the diagnosis, for teaching you what medicine you need. Meaning the rofe can't charge for information. Why not? No, say, can't explain, because it's a mitzvah zaseh. There's a mitzvah v'shavas aveda, chazal darshin v'mfav shevo solo, which in Pshutosha Maker means you should give the sheep, etc., back to him. But if you just took those two words out of context, it would mean you should give him back to him. And therefore, Al Pidrash, we say it means, Zosavidas Gufo, you should give a person back to themselves. Therefore, it's a mitzvah se doraisa vavedas gufo, hashavas aveda, to heal someone, to give their health back to themselves. And you're not allowed to charge for a mitzvah. You have to do mitzvahs for free. Therefore, a doctor cannot charge for his skill. Avoskara torcha vatala mutter, he can charge for the tircha and the batala. Batala means if he has to take off time from doing something else, he can be making money. He's a doctor and a lawyer. He has to take time off from being a lawyer to treat you. He can charge. And tircha, it's a big machlokis, but l'chora, the mechaber means for tircha, that's not necessarily a part of what he has to do as a doctor. Let's say he's a doctor, he has to examine you and give his expert opinion. But then there's other tirchas that you could have done yourself, or you could have had your friends do, or you could have had your family do that he does for you. That he's allowed to charge for. But of course, nowadays, doctors charge for the chachma of a limud. And therefore, it's usher. Basically, according to the Shulchan Aruch, doctors are not allowed to charge money for what we actually pay them for, which is their skill and their diagnosis and their prescriptions. Nowadays, all doctors charge money. So there are two answers in the modern day poskim why nowadays all doctors charge money. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Igros Moshe, if you want to look it up, it's Yordea Chilek Dalid. Simon Nunbez, that nowadays it's very hard to go to medical school. And if you didn't pay the doctors, then no one would go to medical school. Like, no one would go to medical school l'shma. In the old days, you know, there was medical school in the days of the Ramban and the Mechaber. Maybe it wasn't expensive, and maybe people just did it for their intellectual edification. Certainly, once upon a time, it was just part of intellectual study. Someone went, they studied all the seven sciences, and if you want to be a well-rounded person and a Torah Madanik, whatever, you learn medicine. And there wasn't so much medicine to learn anyway. It didn't take so many years. Nowadays, it's very hard to go to medical school. If we stop paying doctors, no one would go to medical school. There'd be no doctors, everyone would die. Therefore, for Pikuach Nefesh, in order to make sure people go to medical school, nowadays it is mutter to pay the doctors. That's the pshat of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach gives a different hesber. He says, because nowadays you don't live in the shtetl anymore. We live in big cities. And even if you don't live in a big city, you have a car and you could drive to a big city. So every doctor could treat goyish patients. And there's no chiv hashavas veidim for goyim, so you could charge the goyish patients. Therefore, every doctor, you owe him schar batala because he could have treated a goyish patient instead of treating you. And therefore, you owe him schar batala for the goyim he could have treated and made money. Lamaisa, those are the two main hesberim. Rav Moshe says, tikkun olam, because you need to give incentive for someone to go to medical school. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, because they could have made money treating goyim, so it is schar batala. Halacha lamaisa, obviously nowadays, we pay the doctors and we assume that is mutter. Gimel. Misha yeshlo samanim. Okay, we're not going to get into the details of this. Misha yeshlo samanim chavir chola v'tzarchlem asul lo lahalos b'demeim yoser min haroi lo'ora lo filo paskul b'demeim harim neitzor hashash lo matzu simanim v'yado ein lo ela d'mehem. You're not allowed to price gouge, right? This is true not only of medicine, right? The case of the Gemara is you're a cab driver and someone's running away from, you know, someone who's trying to kill them. You're not allowed to charge them more than a regular cab ride, even though they'll pay it to save their life. You're not allowed to take advantage of someone in a desperate situation. I mean, hopefully it should be obvious to us, even if it wasn't in the Gemara. And even if they agree to pay, the medicine's supposed to cost 20 shekel. They agree to pay 2,000 because they're going to die. Nonetheless, they only have to be 20. The Achronim say, however, that if they already paid 2,000, they can't sue you for a refund. But you're still a Rasha. Avolim his namaschar rofei harbei chayiv litin lo shechmas avachalo ve'ein lo damim. The afli sheish mitzvah lo dar pososh kol mitzvah say derami akuli amun is dam le echad lo rasa le kaimel mamon emot sina mam yadav lo avkim yado chiyov shelahen. However, one second, Liad, if you're talking about the chachma, the rofe, the skill of the rofe, then even if you agree to pay him $100,000, he's not allowed to charge, and he's certainly not allowed to charge more than necessary. But if you agree to pay him $100,000, you have to pay. Why? Because once you agree to pay, you don't have to pay more than it's worth. But the chachma is worth any, it's worth an infinite amount of money because chachma is invaluable. Therefore, drugs, they have a retail price. If you agree to pay more, you don't have to pay. But chachma is invaluable. So if you agree to pay the rofe $100,000, you have to pay him the $100,000, even though he's a bad person for charging. We don't make him refund and we don't even make him not collect. We let him collect. Okay, that's halacha lemaisa. Although, you know, these things usually don't come up so much nowadays, Baruch Hashem. Most people don't do dastardly things like this. Liad.
I know you just said you don't want to go into this too much, though. I do think this is very the mice entrance of Hashkafas HaTorah nowadays. So I just want to ask, when it comes to Demehen, it seems hard to say that Demehen just means whatever the fair market price is, because then it's just a question of Onah anyways. Doesn't it seem like this is a special din? You can literally only charge the cost of manufacturing for drugs?
That is otherwise, it's just a redundant halacha. Okay, that's a great question, and it could be that one would have to be ma'ayin in the sugya more. I think the pashup shot is like I said, it's the retail price, and it's talking about taking advantage of one particular guy. What you're pointing out is that nowadays drug companies take advantage of everyone by charging everyone more and making that the retail price. And is that okay? Is it not okay? That is a very, very complicated question, and I definitely share your intuition. That, you know, the drug companies should stop getting rich on not caring about people's lives, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, there's another side to the coin, which is that we have to give financial incentive to develop new drugs. And Lemaisa, if you want my real opinion on this, and this is all I'll say, I think that it's really true what some the post-gim, when they talk about Sahal, they like to say, there is like halacha pratit of what two people should do in a situation. And then there's halchot medina, halacha klalit, what should the policies be for society? And those run on different levels. And I think this is definitely one of these cases. If you're asking one pharmacist charges one guy, one doctor charges one guy, that's shulchan aruch, yoredeis, and shinlam advav, sif gimel. You have to deal with it according to the normal rules of ona'ah. And these are basically application of normal rules of ona'ah, as you pointed out. That's not akasha. That's what it is. If you're asking the Kali sense, how should drugs work? How should medicine work, etc.? I think the real answer to that is that I'm not sure if there should be a halacha that determines at all times and places exactly what percent markup you should have, etc., etc. I think those are really the kind of things that are given over to Bez Din / governmental authorities in Medinot Metukanot nowadays, and that people have to obviously use Torah values as well as all the chachmas that have been developed by all the different scientists and et cetera nowadays, and come up with a policy. So I would put that with Mishpat HaMelech.
But locally, okay, you would say this is just an expression of onah, and it's not a problem that
yes,
it seems
to be redundant. Yes, this particular stamp is just an expression of onah. It's not something special about pikuach nefesh.
And it's not challenging that the mechaber would bother to repeat what would be inherently obvious.
No, he often does. I think that's not an uncommon thing. You know, the first of all, the mechaber is not the Rambam. Even the Rambam yesh ladun, but the mechaber is not the Rambam. Okay, shen lamed zayin. Chole shemesh lo meis. Chole shemesh lo meis. Ein modiyan oso shema titaref daito alav. Vein korin chaluko vein bochim miyaspin lefanav shlo yishaber liba mashtikas v'menachemim lefanav. If there's a sick person and a relative of his died, then we don't tell him because it might cause him to be so upset that it would cause pikuach nefesh for him. This guy's in such a bad state. If he hears that his brother died, he might just give up entirely and die, and that would be pikuach nefesh. I know nowadays in the 21st century, we think everyone should always have more information, and it goes against the grain of our contemporary society. But nonetheless, that's the halacha. Of course, you have to take into account the metzias. If the chole has, you know, has electronic communication, is going to find out who died anyway, then you should break it to him in the nicest way possible instead of having it find out accidentally on Facebook. But if we're talking about Mamish, an old guy a very sick guy in the hospital, lo aleinu, should be old or young, but a very sick guy in the hospital who's not checking his Facebook, etc., and who Mamish only knows if you'll tell him, then you should not tell him upsetting things because it will just crush his spirits, and you want to keep him in as good spirits as possible. Even though that seems a little like old-fashioned to us, and authoritarian and paternalistic. But nonetheless, when someone is very, very sick, sometimes you have to be a little authoritarian and paternalistic with them. And therefore, we don't tear kriya. The agav, we'll see later on, we're not even violating the halacha. If this guy's brother died and he doesn't know, he's al pi halacha patur legamri for avelus. The chiv avelus is not chal when his brother dies. It's chal when he finds out. So we're not violating any halachas here. We're just not getting into the halachic situation of avelus. You shouldn't tear kriya for him, and you shouldn't cry and do espedim in front of him, and you shouldn't let him hear people be menachem, the avelim, in front of him. Here, the Shach quotes from the Bach. The Shach quotes three chidushim here, or two or three chidushim here. Number one, he says, if we already said we don't tell him, then what do you mean we don't tear his clothing? If we didn't tell him, obviously we don't tear his clothing. Shach says, we don't tell him, and even if he found out, we don't tear his clothing, because that will make him feel even worse. So even if he finds out his brother died, we don't tear kriya on him, because that'll make him feel even worse. And here we are violating the halacha, because he is chayv in kriya. But nonetheless, we're doch the halacha of kriya for pikuach nefesh, and Shach Sivkan Beis quotes the Bach, if he doesn't even know, then obviously we're not going to cry in front of him. What is the chiddush that we're not going to cry in front of him? And he says two pshatim. Either second pshat is, even if he found out, we still don't cry and do a spadim in front of him because we don't want to make him feel worse, similar to not doing kriya. Or an additional pshat, and we're machmer for both of them, we don't even cry about someone who's not his relative in front of him. Because even if it's not his relative, it still might crush his spirits to find out that people died. So halacha l'maaseh, we're machmer for both pshatim. A, in which case, three things. A, we don't tell him his relative died. B, if he found out, we don't do avelus things to him to not make him feel it harder. And C, we don't even cry and do espedim for non-relatives in front of him, because we don't want to talk about people dying, because that will crush his spirits and that could cause him to die. Yes, Effie.
What if he is expecting his brother to show up and he asks where he is? Are we supposed to lie to him?
So this is Mekubal in all the Achronim, and in Europe, this is what everyone did. They would lie to him all the time. As a matter of fact, it's even, we'll see it a little later on, it's like a Pesachei Tshuva or someone in 30 Simonim from now, who says that even if, let's say he has two brothers and one of them died and the other one is coming to visit him, then, and one brother died, the brother coming to visit him can shave so that he won't know the other brother died. Because this is considered Pikuach Nefesh, and Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Helchas Avelus. Okay, obviously, you know, if he's going to find that anyway, that's a different story. If he's not, then we're makban on this. Shin Lamed Ches.
Ready?
Yes.
When, just to answer Effie a little bit, when the Babaji Rebbe's brother passed away, he was nervous for his mother's health. So for several years, they kept it from her that his brother died. And even wasn't knowing Simone Avelos when he went to visit her during Shiva. He like took off his, he changed his clothing and visited her during Shiva so she wouldn't know what was going on.
Right, so that's exactly what I said to Effie. That's an example. I think that nowadays that wouldn't work for a few years because we have more electronic communication than in the days of Lubavitcher Rebbe's mother, but the idea would still be valid. Shin Lamed Ches, Vidoy. Not a lamus, if the guy's mamish about to die. Omrim lo, his vada. We tell him to do vidoy. Now here it's tricky because the clash of halachos. On the one hand, tell him to do vidoy might crush his spirits. But on the other hand, vidoy is super duper important because after all, olam haba is more important than olam hazeh, and this affects his olam haba. So halacha lemaisa, the vidoy, the olam haba outweighs the olam hazeh, and even though it might crush his spirits, we still tell him to say vidoy, but in order to, you know, sort of soften the blow as much as possible, the omer lo harbi is vada lemaisa, we tell him, oh, a lot of people do vidoy, it doesn't mean they die, it just means maybe. But harbi shalos vada lemaisa, a lot of people didn't do vidoy and died, meaning it's not really, doesn't really mean anything. Not only that, we tell him, and it's true, uvis chasha tamas vada techai, it could be, obviously we don't really promise him, no one can promise what Hashem will do. But we mean it could be that the schar saying vidoy, you'll live. So davka might make you live. And this way, it won't crush his spirits. And whoever says vidoy has a chelik olam haba, and that's why it is very important. The Shach quotes machlokes in him and the Bach. The Bach, there's a line that says, anyone who dies says vidoy. The Bach makes it sound like we tell him because everyone who dies says vidoy. The Shach says, I don't know if the Bach meant it or not, but if the Bach meant it, he's wrong. The Shach says that that's silly. We don't tell him anyone who's going to die says vidoy. We tell him we don't think they're necessarily going to die. You may or may not die. It has nothing to do with anything. Just in case they vidoy and adrabah, maybe say vidoy live. We clearly don't tell him the line from the Mishnah of kol hamusim mizvadim. Whoever is going to die says vidoy. The Shach additionally says that we only tell him this if he's close to dying. If he's not close to dying, then it's not worth the risk because it's a balancing act. It crushes spirits a little. It'll help him get into Olam Haba. The balancing act, if he's close to dying, it's more important to say vidoy. But if he's not close to dying, then we don't tell him to say vidoy because we don't want him to crush his spirits. Although from people like to be mizvad and do tshuva all the time. Scott, you're raising your hand.
So the concept of mizvatr malachayim as it relates to the last two sha'ifim, can it relate to other things? Like if he's an avid sports fan, he's like, did the Cubs win the World Series? Can we also lie to him just so he's not sad? If like through Seichel, like we assume that it actually would impact him?
I think fundamentally, yes. But, you know, easier said than done. You know, lying is actually a lot harder than you think. Especially I think like who won the World Series. So practically, I would say it's not always practical. Theoretically, you're right. But practically, I would never lie about who won the World Series because from what I gather about the world out there, a lot of people know about the World Series, not just like a few people. And therefore, they'll probably find out in the end and they'll say, why'd you lie to me? And it'll backfire. So theoretically, yes. But practically, you know, I would want to restrict this just because it gets complicated. Lying consistently is much harder than any of you think. I've never tried it myself, but it's much harder than any of you think. That's not why we should tell the truth. We should tell the truth because it's the right thing to do, except for Ruach Nefesh. But even if not for that, lying is much harder than you think. You end up messing up generally, especially about something like the World Series. If the guy can't talk anymore, then he could say vidoy in his heart. This is the minug. If the chole is close to dying and can't talk anymore, then the person sits next to him, the relative or rabbi, etc., and says the vidoy and says all the different things that you say before you pass away with him, and he listens. He is shomea ka'ona, as it were, and that way he's saying in his heart and it counts. Theoretically, he could just think it all in his heart himself, but since most people when they're dying don't have yeshiva das to think organized in their heart, the way we do this nowadays is we say it for them and they listen, and that way they think it in their heart. At least the vidoy part, we should make sure to say in a language they understand. You know, it could be that various, okay, maybe they'll feel so religious if they hear us say it that even if they don't understand Hebrew, it'll be an experience of tefillah for them. But the vidoy, it's important that they actually understand it. And the minimum vidoy, if the guy doesn't say anything, just saying, my death should be kapar for my sins, that's the absolute minimum vidoy that is That is acceptable. All these things we don't say in front of, I don't know, in front of people who are not strong-willed, because they will break down and cry, and then the guy will for sure have his spirits crushed and be in pikuach nefesh. We only say it in front of strong people who won't break down and cry. Okay, could be. If a man, you know, break down and cry, he's an amaretz. If a woman won't break down and cry, so we can say it in front of her. It's not a low plug. Seder vidui shchivmira. What should the shchivmira say? We know the minimum is misosi tikapar kol vonosai, but what's the lechatchila? Right, that's the positive outlook. Okay, that's the basic lechachila vidoy. If you want to say the whole thing, like on Yom Kippur, then you have permission. The Gra here says in Sifkat and something. Sifkatan Vav, not only do you have permission, but it's even encouraged. It's not just permitted, it's even encouraged to say a long vidoy. Halach l'maisa, every rabbi should have one of these kinds of madrichs, which is a book of tefillot and other things for special occasions that rabbis carry around with them. This is the art school madrich for the modern rabbis. It's as many pages as my old madrich, but has about a ninth as much material. But it has the Iker things. And here in the art scroll, Madrich, it has all the things you say. It starts with saying that the minimum is im amos tehe misasi kaparasa kaparo kol vonosai. That's from Sif Aleph. Then it says moda ani fonecha from Sif Beis is the ideal. Then it has many, many other things that it's a minute to say if the mace has time, it has ani mamin and sukkum of miel kamoch, etc., and two shilamaloses, and yoshua beseser, and yigdal, and adon olam, and anabakoach, and alkein nekabalacha, and shema yisrael, baruch shem three times, Hashem elokim seven times, and Hashem melech, Hashem malach, etc. And then, there's a whole, okay, you'll get it, you'll see it, you don't have to memorize it. All kinds of tefillos that are also good for the mace to say, but the ikar things are what are in the Shulchan Aruch. Now we're up to Shin Lamites. Okay, Shin Lamites Dine Hagoses. A Goses is someone who is more than Nota Lamas. He's mamish about to die. Goses, what does a Goses really mean? Nowadays, most people aren't the kind of Goses they used to have. Goses literally means when people are dying, they stop eating, they stop drinking, they go from sleeping 8 hours a day to 10 hours a day to 12 to 14 to 16 to 20 to 22 to 23 to 23 and a half, etc. And their breath becomes like gasping for breath and very labored. And that means they're mamish on their deathbed. I mean, not on the bed literally, but mamish on their last legs. That's a goses. Of course, now that's if someone dies at home. Like in the old days, everyone did. Nowadays, if someone dies hooked up to machines in a hospital, you won't necessarily see when they're goses. You'll just have to sort of guess. I remember once asking Rabbi Bleich Shlita, how do you know who's a goses nowadays? The Gemara says, in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, a goses, rov gosim, minastam, a goses dies within 72 hours. How do you know who's a goses when they're not dying at home and you can't see from their breath that they're dying a natural death or in the hospital? Rabbi Bleich says, you can't know. When they die, you'll know they must have been a goses beforehand. So sometimes it's hard to know who's a goses, but a goses is someone who is, in the best of our medical knowledge, very, very close to dying. So there's a special din of a goses. What's the special din of a goses? Says Machal, first of all, a goses is k'chay l'chol dvarav. He is considered alive for all purposes. The Shulchan Aruch points out that's for purposes of gittin and kiddushin and dini mamonos and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for our purpose, the main afmin of being considered alive is that it's usher to kill him. You're not allowed to kill a live person, right? That's the isser v'tzicha. So a goses is just as usher to kill as you and I. And therefore, this, by the way, is very important. I will just point out that Agav, the Shach points out here, we'll see later, that some Rishonim write that a goses is considered alive for the purpose of Kohanim. The Kohen can visit him. We Paskin, that's not true. That maybe only Rabbanan will see, but a Kohen can't go visit a goses. Okay, but for all other purposes, he's considered alive. And Lechor, the reason the Kohen can't visit a goses is he might die, but he's still alive. The Kohen's not Tameh, he just can't visit the goses because he could die any second. But I sent out an article earlier, a very challenging, fascinating article from the Wall Street Journal from quite a number of years ago, I think from 2006, called How Faith Saved the Atheist. You can read it at home. I emailed it to everyone, but it's talking about this woman who's a non-from Jew. Her father is at the hospital, and the doctor said to her mother, "Your husband wants to die. Right, just let him die with dignity. Stop muttering him." And she said, "He can't talk. How do you know he wants to die?" "Oh, like he motioned with his hands when he put in the tube. He was obviously saying he wants to die." Okay. Seems like a big assumption there. But lemaisa, in hospitals nowadays, as much as you hear horror stories of, you know, they prolong someone's life and suffering too much, for every one of those, I think you could hear 10 stories about how they gave up on someone a little too easily. And it's an amazing story. This woman writes in the Wall Street Journal about how they really wanted to kill her father. And she just had this feeling, gut feeling. Her father's 85 and was unconscious. But she had this feeling that he was not going to die. So she complained to one of the doctors who was not at the hospital, who was a frum yid. And the frum yid said, "Yeah, that's a problem. You know, by us, like, it's against our religion to pull the plug, so we don't let them do that." So she had this ein fall. She went to the hospital the next day. She said, "You should know, our family, we're Orthodox Jews." That was a lie. That's much of a lie for Bikoch Nefesh. She said, "We're Orthodox Jews. I spoke to my rabbi, and it is absolutely against our religion to pull the plug. It is our religious belief that, no compromise, that we're not pulling the plug." And she said it was like all of a sudden she pressed a button and a force field came protecting them from all the doctors who wanted to kill them. And like once she said Orthodox Jew, they left her alone. She said it was as if an invisible fence had been drawn around my mother, my sister, and me. No one dared mutter the phrase death with dignity, even though her father was a non-from atheist. He said, nonetheless, you know, his parents, who obviously passed away a long time ago, were from, and even though he hadn't been from for about 70 years, right, he still had the right to pull the Orthodox Jew card for protection. And what happens? A week later, he was moved out of the ICU. A day after that, he was sitting in a chair reading the New York Times. He came home, and let's see what happened in the end. She didn't write exactly how long he lived afterwards, but they took him home and he went back to normal life. Obviously, eventually everyone's time comes. But basically she saved his life. She writes at the end, don't get too excited. She doesn't write that. She writes at the end, "I didn't become from then." It would have been nice if she had, but okay, that's not the story. She said she didn't become from then. She's still a non from yid. She has a new appreciation of Judaism. She has a new appreciation of Judaism. And she joined her local synagogue till he raised the dues and then she quit. But all right, everyone on their own madriga. But anyway, I think it's just a great story. Meaning the point is that we do have to be careful nowadays. I think that in our society, again, this number one shows what a difference it makes if someone's there for the chola, but also that these end of life issues are very, very big issues in our society. And in general, in the hospitals, they want to err on the side of getting rid of people. I think certainly you'll find if you're ever a pulpit rabbi, one of the big jobs of rabbis is to sort of stand up against that. And I think that is a fight that is generally worth fighting, with some caveats we will add in a little bit. Yes, Effie.
We said before we're machmir that kohanim don't visit the goses. If the goses himself is a kohen, his family is a kohen, are we also machmir for that? That it might, even though it might help him get better, if his family comes to visit him, they still say that they can't visit him?
That is a great question. After all, what if it's pikuach nefesh, etc.? Let me think about that. Okay, good question. In any case, l'chora, this goses they're talking about is not like the case of this lady in the Wall Street Journal. This lady, she knew her father wasn't a goses. He was just very, very sick, but he could get better. There's no negosis, even if the guy's a vad, they're not going to get better, or a very strong rove not going to get better. Nonetheless, he could die sooner or later, and you're not even allowed, not only aren't you allowed to kill him when he might get better, that hopefully should be obvious, it should be a no-brainer to all of us that if someone might get better, then you are not allowed to do anything that would make them die. You have to try to save them. That should be a no-brainer to all of us. But here, even the ghost ace is the stomach not going to get better. You can't make him die a minute sooner than he would have otherwise. Let's read some of the nafkaminas. In Koshim Lechayav, here it's talking about things that the Chevra Kadisha does for a dead person. So, and you're not allowed to do this to him while he's alive. You're not allowed to treat him like a dead person. You can't tie his jaw, right? Rigor mortis would make his jaw open. It's covered to tie clothes when he dies. In sachno so, you can't smear him with oil. In madichon so, you can't wash him. In kokinus and nekavav, you can't stop up his orifices, the nekavim, nekavim, which we would generally do to prevent disgustingness from the mace. In shonta karmi tachtav, you don't take the pillow or mattress out from under him to put him on a cold floor like you would to preserve a dead person before they had refrigerators. You don't put him on cold surfaces, whole charsis adama, sand and pottery and pottery shards and earth. You don't put a bowl or a fork or a pitcher of water, velogarga shel melech, or a grain of salt, mashmina lo yaros. So number one, you can't, all these things are usher because you can't move a goseis. The halacha is, the nosakim point out, a goseis is like a flickering candle, which if you touch it, it goes out. That'll say a little later. You can't move a goseis. Number two, even besides moving a goseis, you can't treat him like he's dead. There are two separate serum. You can't move him because that might cause him to die, and you can't treat him like he's dead, because that might cause his spirit to break or other people to not be machshiv his life and to cause him to die. And therefore, you can't tell the cities to mourn for him. You can't rent flutes. They used to have flutes at the funeral for dirges, umekononos, and women to wail. You can't close his eyes, which the cover may say after he dies, till he's dead. Anyone who closes his eyes while he's dying is a murderer, because you might make him die 1 second earlier, and that's considered murder. Rather, you have to wait a little while to make sure he didn't faint, that he's really dead, before you close his eyes. Being korim lo chotzim lo aspid alav, you can't tear kriya or bare your shoulders, which is the kind of kriya they did in the old days, or say aspedim, because you can't treat him like he's dead. Lo machnisim or in labayis, you can't bring the coffin into the house, ad sheyamos, until he is dead. Below posting of tzedek hadin, and after, you can't say tzedek hadin until dayin ha'emes, etc., until he dies. Okay, the principle is, again, you can't treat him like he's dead until he dies. In addition to the fact that there's a double issue here, you can't treat him like he's dead, even if it doesn't physically affect him, and you can't physically touch him, because any touching might cause him to die, earlier. What if you can touch him, it might cause him to die earlier, but it might prolong his life? That's the Pesach Tshuva here, quotes from the Shlosh Yaakov, the famous Psak. Let's say the guy right now, let's say, no one knows for sure, but let's say he's going to live a week. And you could do a therapy, you could give medical treatment. If it fails, he'll die right now. But if it succeeds, he might live a year. So are you allowed to take a chance on killing him earlier for the sake of extending his life later? The answer is yes. You're allowed to do medical treatment. That's not included in this Isser. You can't stam touch him for no reason, because that might kill him and you'll be a murderer. But if you're touching him to do medical treatment, which might help and might make him die later or earlier, and it's worth it because it might make him live another year, even though it might make him die earlier, then you're allowed to do that because that is worth it, and that's called refuah and not ritzicha.
Are there questions of percentages as to how likely a procedure is, how well practiced it is, who the doctor is, things like that, or any time there's something which might help? It's a blanket out there.
That is a good question. The Pesach Tshuva here, quoting the Shvos Yaakov, concludes that you have to be very deliberate in this and consult with a lot of doctors and a rabbi. He doesn't necessarily give us the percentages. He just says you have to think very, very carefully. You have to think very carefully about this. It sounds from here like it's not a matter of percentages. Like he thinks fundamentally, if he can live for a long time, then that's better than taking a chance of him dying a day or an hour earlier. Of course, what does a long time mean, et cetera? I assume at a certain point there's all these borderline cases. And how do you judge the borderline cases is a very good question. And I'm not sure I know the algorithm. It's a good question. You know, some of the cases are obvious. You know, if it's 10% chance he might live a year, or a 90% chance he might die one day earlier, then give him the treatment. What to do in borderline cases, I'm not sure. It's a good question.
You have cases like if you don't do anything, he'll live for a year. If you do some risky treatment, he could either live for 10 years or die in 3 months. So is there Shave Al-Tassa? Is that better there?
Right. So I don't think Shave Al-Tassa is better there. I think you have to decide what makes the most sense. How do you decide what makes the most sense is a good question. I'm going to leave that with Tzarech Iyun for now. I'm going to write down my Tzarech Iyuns. Okay. Who else? Did you, without a hand, Binyamin? I guess not. Okay. 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 Viter. Says the Ramah here. The Ramah has a big chiddush. This is a big machlokis to Meis Yosef. Says the Ramah, quoting Rivash. Give me a second here. Yes, said the Ramah, quoting Rivash. V'yej omrim de'in chotzen lo kever, af v'she'enu mev abayis arach shiyomis. This is an interesting question. It is an afternoon of the following chakira. The chakira is, why are you not allowed to treat him like dead? There are two tzdadin to this chakira. One side of the chakira is because it will break his spirits. The other side of the chakira is because you're just fundamentally not allowed to treat him like dead because you can't give up on him. So is it because it'll break his spirits, or because fundamentally you can't give up on him while he's alive? The nafkamina is, what if he can't see? What if you're digging in the cemetery? Send a message to the cemetery to dig a kever. If it's a matter of breaking his spirits, then it won't break his spirits because he can't see. If it's a matter of giving up on him, and fundamentally you can't treat a live person like he's dead, then it should be usher. The Rivash here says usher. That's what's quoted by the Ramah. However, most Achronim disagree. The Shach quotes from the Bach. The Bach says it's mutter midin as long as eino cholam margish b'davar. And the Gra, I think, says the same thing. If I'm not mixing up with someone else. Maybe it's not the Gra. Hold on a second. Yes, the Gra says, well, the Beis Yosef is docha this. And the Beis Yosef has also argued with this. And the Pesach Tshuva quotes from the Mishnah Melech also argues with this. So the Beis Yosef, the Bach, the Shach, the Gra, the Mishnah Melech all disagree. Halacha l'maisa, we don't pass like this, Ramah. We pass that you're allowed to make funeral preparations for a goses as long as he doesn't notice. Because it won't break his spirit. And you're just preparing. You're not treating him as dead. You're just preparing. You're not allowed to tell everyone he's dead, Mashmi Mayaros. That's mamish treating him as dead. But if it's just preparing, then sort of tutsad mohakel, you're only preparing, you're not saying he's dead. And B, he's not margish, then we are materit. Shai, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, just about touching the mace, about like when we said reticha versus refuah. If you're like adjusting the pillow, which you think is helpful, I mean, the person's not talking, but theoretically it looks a lot more comfortable. Is that something you're allowed to do? Because you're not a doctor, but.
So it's funny, from here it would seem that even if he's going to be more comfortable, if he's mamish in the state of goses, you can't touch him at all because any movement might just knock the last wind out of him. Lechora, the goses we're talking about here, you know, I mean, it's a good question, but it would seem to me that it would be usher even to make him more comfortable. That seems to be the pashut pshat. Again, we're not talking about someone who's just in danger in the hospital. We're talking about someone who's mamish dying. Mamish like in his last breaths. Someone who's mamish in their last breaths, then we would not touch them at all, I think. Kach nira. The Ramah then says something which has no hezber alpi nigla, is only alpi nistar. It's a mesora from Yehuda Chassid. The asar lachtov shum keverly yos pasuach alamacher shlo yikurenu bo ameis bo so yom yishakana bedavar. You're never allowed to dig a grave and leave it open overnight to bury the next day. And if you do, it's dangerous. One of the healthy people will die. Chas v'shalom. The Shach points out it from the Bach in the course of a different discussion that worst comes to worst, you could always just put the dirt back in the grave overnight. But even though you don't understand behind this, it's one of these many things from Yehuda Chassid that don't make any sense to us based on our knowledge of Nigla. Nonetheless, we are machmir for this from Yehuda Chassid. Shai, is your hand still up? No. Okay. Yoni.
Covering it includes just putting a tarp over, or you have to re-put the dirt back in? I misunderstood the Shai.
It sounded like you have to put the dirt back in. That's what the Shach wrote. You have to put the dirt back in. Otherwise, it's still dug. I don't know what the minig is nowadays. The truth is, I haven't asked the Chevr Kadishas what the minig is nowadays. It's a good question. But the Shach sounds like you have to put the dirt back in, not just put the tarp. You know, if you want, give me 1 second. I'll get my handy dandy Bade Shulchan, see if he says anything. My handy dandy Bade Shulchan Hechazavelos doesn't have Simon Shin Lamed Tes. Starts with Simon Shin Mem. So I don't know. You have to ask the minig of the Chevr Kadishas nowadays. Okay, I assume they know what they're doing and they have their protocols. Yes, Binyamin.
Is this a din that, like, even from like the date of the night? Because in at least in Yisrael and Yerushalayim, they have night kibbutz all the time. So the Chorah, the Gariv.
No. He says Lamachar means from the day to the next day. So here it says Ba'osu Hayom, but it means Ad Lamachar. He says Ad Lamachar means from the next morning.
You say it'll be okay.
If you marry at night, that's fine. Night.
Uh-huh. So if you're going to get buried like right before Neitz, it would be okay. Just not after Neitz or Alos, right, or whatever?
Or Alos, yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay.
But I assume the Chevr Kadishas know what they're doing. And they must have a minig about this. The Shach says fill it in, but I don't know what the minig is. Continuing. This is very Chomer and Yonim. V'chein osur ligrol l'meish yom zayir. You're not allowed to cause someone to die faster. That is a basic principle. And that is ritzicha, to make someone die faster. It is about as serious an avera as you can imagine. Like someone who is a ghostish for a long time and having trouble dying, his neshama is having trouble leaving the body, and you feel bad for the neshama. You want it to finally leave the body and stop suffering. You're not allowed to take the pillow and mattress out from under him. Because they think that maybe the type of feathers from some sort of bird that were in this pillow keep his neshama from leaving. Okay, whether it's true or not is not the point. I have no idea if feathers of certain birds have powers to keep the neshama from leaving. The point is, you can't take the pillow out to make him die. V'chein lo yizdenim in koma, you can't move, take the pillow out from him or move him off the pillow. V'chein also losam avtechos beis haknesses tachas rosho kadesh yipari. You also, another superstitious idea, you're not allowed to put the keys to the shul under his head, which then makes the neshama leave. Avalim yesham davar shegorim ikov yitzias nefesh, but if there's something that is just stopping the nefesh from leaving, like there is a big noise, like someone's chopping wood, which keeps him from dying, or there's salt on his tongue, which keeps him from dying, you're allowed to stop the guy from chopping wood. You're allowed to take off the salt, because that's just hasaras moneah. The principle here is very clear. You're not allowed to cause him to die, but you're allowed to take away something that artificially interferes and prolongs his life. So you're not allowed to cause death, but you're allowed to remove an impediment to death, hasaras moneah. The Shach quotes from Lavosh Yed Akasha. How come, if you're allowed to do hasaras moneah, why aren't you allowed to take out the feathers? The feathers were just stopping him from death. Taking out the feathers, that's Saras Monea. The Lavush himself, who the Shach does not quote in full, says it must be not that the feathers keep him alive, but these feathers have a special power that moving them causes him to die. Okay, but the simple shot is what the Shach says. No, you're allowed to take away the feathers. That's just Saras Monea. The only problem is, since he's on the feathers, when you take away the feathers, it moves him, and the Isser isn't taking away the feathers, the Isser is moving him. So that's the Pashup Shach. It's mutter to take away the feathers. Just practically, it's usher to take away the feathers because that moves him. But that is the principle. The principle is that, just give me a second, you're allowed to take away something that keeps him alive. You're not allowed to do something that kills him. You're not allowed to do something that kills him. You're not allowed to do something that kills him. But either way, you're not allowed to move him. The Taz asked the Kasha, why are you allowed to take the salt off his tongue? Isn't that going to move his tongue a little? And the Nekudas Akesav answers, Nianua Kalkazalav Klumu, no, just taking salt off his tongue will move him just a nanometer or something. That's not called moving him. Not like taking the pillow out, then his whole head flops down. But something as light as removing a piece of salt, I guess you would remove it carefully. with tweezers or something, that is not called moving him. Okay, these are the basic principles. Binyamin, you had a question. No, Ellie had a question. Who had their hand up? Ellie.
Yeah. So is this what permits you to cut up a feeding tube?
So here we get into an issue which is very, very chomer. One of the biggest shilas in medical halacha nowadays is two things. Two super duper chomer shilas nowadays. One shila, which I'm only going to briefly refer to, is not what you're asking yet, but the question of all these things you're not allowed to do when someone is alive. Obviously, you're allowed to do them after they're dead. After they're dead, of course, you take out the pillow and you move the body and bring him to the morgue and you tie the jaw and you vechule, vechule, vechule. What's called alive, what's called dead nowadays? This is the big famous brain death controversy. What's the halachic definition of death? We know what the secular definition of death is. What's the halachic definition of death? Here, there are three shitas as to what the halachic definition of death is. There's a shitas yachid that the Ein Yaakov quotes from Rav Aryeh de Medina, who is a controversial achron, that it depends on the brain. If your brain functions, you're alive. If your brain doesn't function, you're dead. Okay, that's like in the secular world, they think. That's a shitas yachid. There is one person who claims that Rav Shlomo Zalman theoretically agreed with that, but not Lemaisa. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I don't know. Lemaisa, that's a shitas yachid. If you want to look up the Ein Yaakov, he's in Yom Adaf Pehei. He quotes from Aryeh de Medina, who says that it depends on the brain. If you want to look up a report that maybe Rav Shlomo Zalman theoretically might have said this was true, look up in the journal called Asya of Medical Halacha, Volume 53 to 54, it's a double joint volume. Okay, that's a shitas yachid. No one really holds like that. The second shita, which are from our yeshiva, Yehuda David Bleich, J. David Bleich, as he goes by, holds based on a Chacham Tzvi and a Chassam Sofer, holds, and the Tzitz Eliezer holds. So the Tzitz Eliezer shita is that a person's only dead when they stop breathing and their heartbeat stops. When their heart stops. Generally, first you stop breathing, then your heart stops. Anyway, when the lungs and the heart both don't work. So that's the second shita. That Tzitz Eliezer holds, right? Blythe passes this way, he brings rice from Achronin, that it's the heartbeat as well as the breath. The Pashup shot is like the third shita. The Gemara in Yom Adaf Behe says, we know someone's alive when they're breathing. We know someone's dead when they're not breathing, because the pasuk says, "Kol asher nishmas ruach hayim ba'apav." Whoever's breathing is alive. The majority pshat. This is the pshat of the Igros Moshe and others. Says that it's breathing. Breathing is what determines if you are alive or dead. Okay, so then it's pretty pashut. If the guy's breathing, he's alive. If he's not breathing, he is dead. What is the big halachic controversy? The big halachic controversy is the following, a question we cannot necessarily answer from the Gemara and the classical poskim. What if the guy is hooked up to a respirator and he is breathing because a machine is artificially pumping his lungs, but he's not breathing on his own? So what if you are artificially breathing him? That's called a respirator. Because a machine can make someone breathe, not forever, but for, you know, quite a few days or weeks. So what if a person can't breathe on his own, but a machine is making him breathe? How do you know a person can't breathe on his own? How can you know if the person could breathe on his own or not? And how do you know? Maybe like right now he can't breathe on his own, but fundamentally he could breathe on his own. Obviously, someone like can't breathe for an hour, no one's going to say they're dead if you just put them on a respirator and then they'll breathe on their own for another 30 years. So the only way to know they can't breathe on their own is if what's called brain death. Not necessarily brain death. A lot of hospitals nowadays are very makele. They don't follow all the legalities of brain death. Most hospitals nowadays will declare you brain dead even if you don't meet the strict legal definition. But let's say you want to play by the books, right? By all the rules, machber like all the rules. The rules are in most countries, a person's only called brain dead if the part of their brain that controls the breathing is totally like melted and doesn't, it like can't possibly work. Like obviously if the brain is melted, then it can't possibly make you breathe. And that's the bottom part of the brain is the part that controls the breathing, the most basic part of the brain, the lowest order part of the brain. So halacha lemaisa, what's the brain death controversy? Lemaisa, the brain death controversy is this. It's not that anyone really thinks, like Rav Arya de Medina, that it depends on your brain. No, it depends on your breathing, or for that matter, your breathing and heartbeat, which is the same purpose for us. It depends on your breathing or your breathing and heartbeat. The machlokas is this. Is someone dead if they don't breathe, but if they're on a respirator, they're alive? Or if someone's dead if they can't breathe inherently based on the chefza they are? In which case, if their brain is melted and their brain dead, even if they're in a respirator, they're dead because that's not called breathing. That's called something else pumping air into your lungs. So that's the biggest fundamental machlokas nowadays, is brain death, death or not? Again, not because anyone holds like the sheet of Arya de Medina that it depends on your brain. Everyone agrees it depends on breathing. Or, according to Tzitz Eliezer and Ari Bleich, it depends on breathing and heartbeat. The question is, does it depend on your own power to breathe or on any breathing? If it depends on any breathing, then brain death isn't death. If it depends on your own power to breathe, then brain death is death. Because if the brain is melted, like mamish liquefied, then obviously there's no possible way in science that the body can make someone breathe. And even though there's always a story about someone who was brain dead and then woke up and walked around, that's just a story about someone who they thought was brain dead because they didn't check carefully. Like if someone's brain is really turns into liquid mush, then they can't possibly get up and walk around. That's clear. Why do we care about this? What's the big nafgamina if brain death is death or not? One nafgamina might be because to save money. The hospital says, if the guy's brain is dead, why should we keep him on a respirator? He might survive another 2 weeks or a week on a respirator and waste money. Let's take him off the respirator now so we save money. So that's one nafgamina. The other nafgamina, which is the more interesting nafgamina, is for organ donation. If someone wants to save someone else's life with organ donation, so most organs cannot be taken out of someone who's not breathing. Once someone's not breathing, their organs are dead and they're not useful anymore. If someone's still breathing, their organs are useful. So what do? They keep someone on a respirator, pumping, they're making their heart go and making their lungs pump air until they're brain dead. And then they take out their organs and donate them. So what's the status of that? If you hold from the sheet of brain death, meaning you define breathing as breathing in and of yourself, as independent breathing, then a brain dead person is brain. And if you take out his organs, save other people, you're doing a big mitzvah of pikuach nefesh, of atzalos nefashos. If you don't hold from brain death and you hold that any breathing counts as alive, then if you take someone's organs to save someone else, you are a murderer. You can't kill someone to save someone else. We all know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, my chazis v'chule, that it's yuhar gal yavor. So this is a tremendous, tremendous nafgamina. There's not really a great safe side to this. Because if you say we should rely on brain death, you might be killing a living person in order to take out his organs. That sounds pretty awful. If you say we don't hold from brain death, then there's the other guy's waiting for the transplant who's dying, and you're making the other guy die. Like, each shita makes someone die here. There's no, like, safe shita here. Halach lemaisa, this is a big machlokes. The Rabbanut HaRashen in Israel paskind that they hold from brain death. That's the official policy of the Israeli government. If someone's brain is liquefied, then they are dead halachically according to the government here. Rav Moshe David Tendler of our yeshiva understood the sheet of his father-in-law, Rav Moshe Feinstein. I went through these Rav Moshe Feinstein 100 times. It's really hard to know who's right. That's why very intelligent people disagree. Rav Moshe David Tendler understood that his father-in-law agreed. Some people want to say Rav Shlomo Zalman agreed. You know, there's all these shmuas, Baal Peh from Shlomo Zalman. Anyway, one shita, which is maybe Rav Moshe Feinstein, is that brain death is death. In which case, once someone's brain is liquefied, then they're dead. You can take out their organs, take them off the respirator. They're not alive anymore. They're not a ghost ace. They're a mace. Many other poskim, the way others understood Rav Moshe Feinstein, all the Rosh Yeshiva and YU, to the best of my knowledge, at least me Vaday or me Suffolk, say that brain death is not death, or that it's a suffix, and therefore you have to be a Sheva al-Tasa, and you can't do any Maisa relying on brain death. So I think that even though there's, from common sense, it might very well seem that brain death, it would make sense that it would be dead, because lemaisa, how is that called being alive or breathing if it's just a machine is pumping? Lemaisa, it seems that the majority of poskim and the poskim of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, Rabbi Willig, Rabbi Shechter, etc., are all machmer on this, at least misafik, and say not to rely on brain death. So it is a big machlokes. My Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein held that this was a suffix that he could not be machriya. It was a question which cannot be answered based on the categories available in the Gemara and the Rishonim and the classic Achronim, because our Metzias is so different and it's very hard to prove something when they didn't have this Metzias. And sometimes you're lucky. There's some like weird Gemara of some weird thing that makes that's like sounds like the craziest case that why would they ever talk about that happens to correspond to something we invented nowadays and it helps us out. And sometimes you're not lucky. And you don't have any weird Gemara that you thought was just silly and now you realize corresponds to this case. And there is no Gemara that corresponds to it. And you don't know how to be Machriya. My Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein was not Machriya this. And therefore, what he said was, you could take that in two ways. You could say, I'm not Machriya this. And therefore, Shevi Al Tasa Adif. And you should assume brain death is not dead. What he said was, he's not Machriya this. And therefore, he thinks people have the right to follow either opinion. And if someone wants to, you know, donate the organs of their loved one and rely on brain death and they feel that that's the right thing to do, they can rely on that opinion. And if someone wants to preserve the life of their loved one and feel that they're still alive, they can rely on that opinion. That was his psak. His psak was that it was up to the family to rely on whichever opinion they felt they wanted to rely on. Okay, there are always pluses and minuses to democracy, as it were. That was his shita. Okay. So this is a big, big inyan. The other big inyan, which has to do with this simon, which we don't really have time to properly get into now, and maybe we'll try to have a guest lecture about it by someone who really knows what's going on in the hospitals, not just someone who knows what they read in halacha books, which is, you know, it's a different madrega when someone actually has been there and seen these things. But the question of what's called gram misa, and what's called Asuras Monea. That is one of the biggest issues nowadays. Let's assume the guy is alive. Let's assume he's brain dead, but brain dead is alive. Or maybe he's not brain dead. Maybe he's a ghost. He's very close to dying, and he's just suffering. So when do you say the guy's suffering so much, and we shouldn't mutter him, and we should just let him die? And when do you say, and you should be maser the monea to dying? And when do you say that you shouldn't be gorin dying? It's very subtle. Just like in Hilchas Shabbos, all these machom tzomet and other things, what's our source monea and what's a grumma, etc. Here it makes not just the difference of Chol Shabbos, it's the difference of shvichos dam and mamish. What is called killing someone and what is called not prolonging their life? It's a big difference because you're allowed to not prolong someone's life if they're 100% dying anyway and just suffering. You're not allowed to cause someone to die, even if they're 100% dying anyway and they're just suffering, and then you're a murderer if you do it. So, and agav, I just want to point out that every year, the world goes a little more off the deep end in the direction of killing people. And it's very important for us to fight the battle that human life is valuable. You know, once upon a time, it was just, oh, these doctors, when someone was going to die in 3 days anyway, wanted to kill him today when he was suffering. And it's like, oh, okay, you see both ways, but we have to look at what the Shulchan Aruch says and, you know, remain loyal to halacha. Nowadays in Europe, it's already getting to be, you know, when someone's old and cantankerous and yells at their relatives and they're finally sick of them, they say, just let the person die, even if they would have lived another 10 years. And it's really, the world is going a little bit off the deep end, in my humble, objectively correct opinion. Objectively correct, not because I'm so smart, just because that's what Hashem thinks. So I think it's very important to be vigilant in the value of life, which is something which is very, very, very much in question in the contemporary world. Shai.
Yeah. How do we say that we can be hasaris, that we can be meiser the monea if we're 100% sure they're going to die? I mean, how do we balance that with lo sama al damri acha, meaning that you don't have to fight to the last second to give every medication and give every machine,
so,
and
apparently,
even if they're suffering?
Right, it's a good question. They bring a big riot for the mice of the Shifcha of Rebbe, although some people question there might be a difference between the realm of tefillah and the realm of hishtaglus, that when Rebbe was dying, he was suffering, and all the chacham were davening for him to live, and so he couldn't die, because Hashem couldn't ignore the tefillahs of all the chachamim. But he was suffering a lot. So his Shifcha, who knew him better than all the Rabbanim, she knew him, you know, on the more personal side, said, this is crazy, you know, why is his suffering being prolonged? We know he's going to die anyway. Why are these rabbis, you know, not letting him die? And she took like a big vase and threw it down in the middle of the base meters with a big crash, and everyone got distracted and stopped saying Tehillim when it crashed, and then he died. And Chazal quote this seemingly approvingly. And all the achronim are conclude from this that even though we should always lo saman al damri echa, if someone is dying anyway, then prolonging their suffering is not necessarily lo saman al damri echa. There's a limit to how much suffering, you know, someone doesn't have to suffer to live an extra couple hours or an extra day. Someone doesn't have to be tortured to live an extra couple hours or an extra day. Now, if the guy's not suffering, that's a different story. That's Ramah's about when he's suffering. And that's Makobal in the poskim, that it's not Bechlal Osam al Damri Echa, maybe because even if you were in his place, you wouldn't want this to happen, maybe because it's not good for him in the, you know, in the big picture. But Halach L'maisa, we accept that. The big machlokes is this. Halach L'maisa, I can't properly get into it, but let me just give you a few maskanas from the poskim, and I know I'm not really getting into it, Makoros, etc. What they call heroic measures, meaning treating someone aggressively, treating someone's illness aggressively, if it's just going to cause them a lot of suffering and not really prolong their life significantly. I don't mean treating someone aggressively if they might get better and live another 10 years. I mean treating someone aggressively if Mela, everyone knows they're not going to make it out of the hospital. Everyone knows they're not making it out of the ICU, whatever. Just, you know, you could do all kinds of crazy treatment to them. Halach l'maisa, we assume if it's not going to significantly prolong someone's life and it's going to cause them a lot of suffering, then you do not have to, and it's better not to do aggressive treatment. There's a great book about this. Anyone here, raise your hand if you've read Being Mortal by Liad, help me with the name of the guy who wrote it. Is it
by Atul Gawande?
It's an Indian name. What's his name?
Is it Atul Gawande?
No. Yes, Atul Gawande, something like that. Atul Gawande. Some Indian name. We're not being racist and stereotype and saying that like all smart doctors are Indians. But anyway, there's this fellow, Atul Gawande, I think was his name. Thank you, Liad. Who wrote this great book called Being Mortal about dying. And it's definitely worth reading. And he basically, you know, pointed out that it's a lot more important to give people better quality of life when they're going to die and more or less the same anyway, than to be very aggressive at a lot of things that may or may not actually accomplish anything and certainly won't accomplish anything in the long run. Again, I'm not talking about if there's a chance the guy will live another 10 years or he might die quickly or he might die soon. Then, okay, that's mamish bikuach nefesh. If the guy's going to live around 3 years and if you give him a lot of treatment, he's going to live on the average around 3.1 years. And just he's going to suffer those 3.1 years instead of, you know, being able to enjoy his life. Or the guy's going to live 3 days. And every doctor knows he's not going to live more than 5 days, but they're giving chemotherapy. You know, you have to be, you know, obviously the devil's in the details, but this is the case, aggressive treatment, 1 second shy, we assume that you don't have to give. The big question is, what about a respirator? The assumption is, if it's not going to save him anyway, if it's just going to prolong his suffering, then you don't have to put a guy in a respirator. I'm not talking about you put on the respirator and you might be able to cure him. That's a different story. if there's no way, you know, doctors know this doesn't work and that doesn't work and that doesn't work and he has this here and that there and, you know, he already has the cancer everywhere and he already has everything's ruptured and every system's failing anyway, then you don't have to extend by doing heroic actions. The big question is, do you have to give him a feeding tube? Do you have to give him oxygen, meaning like one of those masks? Do you have to give him antibiotics, et cetera? All these are controversial. Many poskim assume that things that are not specialized treatments, that you have to do. That's something which is not called hasaras moneya. That's just routine maintenance. Most poskim assume as a general rule, it's very controversial, you could question it, that just routine things you have to give, that's not within the heter hasaras moneya. But aggressive treatments you don't have to do. The actual hasaras moneya is not so common nowadays, like taking out a grain of salt or a noise or something. What about turning off a respirator? Most post-consume turning off a respirator is considered gram misa, not hasaras moneya. So halacha lemaisa, we're not going to pass to halacha lemaisa. Hopefully we'll have a guest cheer on this. But basically, real hasaras moneya, like taking away something, is pretty rare nowadays because most poskim assume that turning off machines is not called taking something away, it's called gram misa. What you're allowed to do is not do treatment, and then the machlokes of poskim is what kind of treatment are you not allowed to do, and most poskim say you have to do routine treatments, but not aggressive treatments, and obviously the devil is in the details there, and it's a big mitzvah b'Torah, and we will leave it at this for now and try to come back to it in a different setting. If you will allow me, we didn't get to Sif Beis, Gimel, and Dal yet today. We have a little more that we didn't get to. But we, you know, we got a decent way through what we're supposed to accomplish today. So we will call it a day for now, and we will pick up on Tuesday. We will quickly finish the last, actually, fourth Seifim of Simon Shin Lamed Tes, and we will spend most of our time, Amir Tashem, next year on Simon Shin Mem. Again, if anyone has any questions during their Seder time, please feel free to call me or to WhatsApp me. Ellie Weinstein setting a good example for all of us. When he has a question during a Seder, he WhatsApps me. We should hear Besoros Tovos. And less cholim, and less gosasim, and less misa, and refuah shleima for us and the klal. If anyone has questions, I'm not running.
Rabbi, are we doing Maros on Tuesday?
No, it's also to do Maros over Zoom. I've mentioned that a few times already. Yeah, I don't know how Maros is looking. I think we might have finished our Maros curriculum at this point. But let's see what happens in Kayitzman.
Does that mean we're ready?
I'm still hoping things will go back to normal by Kayitzman. I don't know if they will or not, but it's always good to hope.
It's true. Yeah. Rabbi, when you take someone to the hospital, are you able to tell them, even if you're not a doctor, don't do anything like strong, because once they start doing those things, you can't tell them to remove them.
Right.
So how do you balance?
Generally they consult with the family members. Like if you're the next of kin or you have medical power of attorney, generally they will consult with you. If not, then you have no right to an opinion. It's actually, okay, I should mention this next time. It's actually a good idea nowadays for people to appoint a medical power of attorney, like sign a shtar that says who gets to make medical decisions for them, and even more so to make clear what they think before they're in a stage where they can't say what they think anymore. And even if what they think is you should consult my Orthodox rabbi, you know, that's also very valuable. Or if they have more, you know, more to say. As a matter of fact, every Orthodox rabbinical organization, Agoda, RCA, etc., actually has a recommended form that they say you should fill out that will like give them instructions in conformity with halacha. Again, generally the halacha is more machmir about preserving life than the doctors, although in some cases the doctors might be more machmir than the halacha. Every case is every case is different. But maybe I'll send that out also on the email. That's a good idea. But generally, next of kin to make that decision as a general rule, if I haven't signed a form.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, how's everyone doing in Gross?
Amazing.
Baruch Hashem. How's Effie?
Baruch Hashem, good. In Gross, I made it back today.
Oh, you're back to Gross.
Baruch Hashem.
Great. Your family, where's you were with your father?
My father-in-law.
Father-in-law, is he still in Yerushalayim?
No, he went back last night.
He went back. Okay, great. Yeah. Everyone had a good visit. Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem. How are you holding? How are the seniors holding up? Okay. Still waiting patiently.
They're really in quarantine.
Baruch Hashem.
Very great. Baruch Hashem.
Okay, great. How are the Babenders?
Backyard.
Babenders camera's off.
Ah, he's been caught.
How are things by Rebbe?
Baruch Hashem, great. Baruch Hashem, kids are keeping up with their learning, more or less. I'm trying to keep up my starim, more or less.
You've been davening?
What?
You've been davening b'yechidus every day, or you have minyan?
I've been davening b'yechidus almost every day. The shuls are closed in Alon Shvat. But I've been doing what Rav Asher Weiss said. Did you hear Shmuz?
Not adding things, but focusing more on and adding 15 minutes to daven.
Yeah. Well, I've been taking it a little off davka. Daven longer b'chidus than you do in shul. You have to make up for chazaras shots, right? So it's not just like adding 1 minute. So far I've been successful at every shachris is longer than in shul. It's easier for me to do than for the gross guys to do. Trust me.
With all your extra time, have you graded the bechinas yet?
Whoever handed in their bechina on time, I graded on time.
Oh, wait. So it should be 2 days off. It should be ready by tonight. Is that how it works?
That's not how it works.
Anyway, I'm going to try as soon as I can. Mirtz Hashem. If not today, then tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Have a great day, everybody.
Yeah,
Russia Weiss is giving shirts in it, by the way.
Where?
On Zoom.
Anywhere.